Welcome to you all. We are on for overcoming overwhelm. So it's important that we start. It's 10:02, and it's important that we start because of being able to, you know, rely on what we're saying about how we're going to run the rest of the day. This is probably one of the most powerful days you're ever going to get to do, because most people suffer from overwhelm, not just now and then, but like a lot of the time. So we've got some pretty powerful stuff to be talking about. Before we get on to that, here's how we run the day. Essentially, to keep it really nice and simple, then what we ask you to do is be on time, because we're going to take breaks during the day. So being on time gets to be an important part of that. If you can switch your phone to silent, that would be really helpful. I know that it doesn't sound like a big deal, but what happens on Zoom is that if there's a noise in the background, at your end, the microphone multiplies it 1,000 times and then pumps it through the system. So most of us get deafened by your dog barking or your whatever. So if you can put your phone on silent, that would be good. And if you have your video on, that's good, because personal development requires that we can see each other. So I'll be switching backwards and forwards. Irene, whoever you've got up there. Orange on, muted herself. So if you can turn your video on, that means that we can see you. Of course, with Julie's video on, that means you can see a jet ski going past right now. So you'll have to let us know when the champagne turns up, Jules. And because it's 10:03, it's probably late. Next thing is to emphasize that these things work better if we run them as a workshop rather than a lecture from me. So what would be the worst case scenario is I just talk. And the reason behind that is after 36 years of this kind of thing, what I've realized is that a lot of what I know is not actually apparent to me. So I know it after I've been asked about it. So I would encourage you to ask questions and to seek clarification and to argue if you like, and those kind of things. That way, I'll be forced to dive deep into the kind of, you know, the reservoir of experience that I've built up over the last 36 years. And that makes for a much better experience for you guys, and certainly a much more interesting one for me. Otherwise, I'm sitting in a dark room looking at a computer screen and not interacting with people that I know and I care and I, you know, care about. So interaction is the key. So that means just interrupt. That just means speak up when you want. You'll probably have to unmute yourself to do that, and you'll probably forget that the first few times. But after a while, you'll get used to it. Of course, it is imperative that everything that we say and do and talk about, you keep that confidential. And the reason behind that is not that we don't want you to go and teach this. In fact, I think teaching what you learn is a really great way to learn it for yourself. So by all means, share this information. Just don't share each other's personal details about, you know, I was talking to Irene the other day and she said blah, 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 and, you know, this and that and the other. Personal stuff needs to be kept confidential, this is your first opportunity for a bit of interaction. So what I'm going to get each of you to do is say, yeah, I'm cool with that. So have a go at that.
Yep, that's fine by me.
Great, thanks, Pete.
Yeah, fine by me.
Yeah, thanks, yep. Ange.
Good by me.
Great, thanks.
All good, Paul.
Thanks, Michael. We probably don't need that from Julie. Okay, so let's hop into it. So our schedule today, once again, the idea here is that we're going to keep this as simple as we can. What we're going to do is go hard for 45 minutes and then rest for 15. We're just going to do that until we get through the material. Hopefully that means we end up finishing about 3 o'clock. But pretty much if your dog throws up on the carpet, or, you know, if the Hell's Angels come to your front door and you've got to take care of something and you just absolutely have to do that, well, what you can know is that we start again on the top of the hour. So I'm going to try and wrap it up at 45 minutes too. Like at 1:45, I'm going to say, okay, that's where we're up to. We're taking a break, grab a cup of tea, go to the loo, come back, and we'll start on the hour. So if you can organise to be getting back online, like don't get offline, just leave it running, but back in your chair a minute or two before top of the hour, we can actually pick up where we were and continue to run from there. So that should make it fairly simple if you have to be taken away for something. We're not going to stop for lunch, and the reason behind that is it will slow me down from the point of view of, you know, I will want to go and have a sleep after that, and that's probably true for you too. So in thinking about that, then just kind of, you know, if you can graze through the day, then maybe you'll even lose some weight. So that might be handy as well for those of you who want to do that. So essentially, starting on the hour, every hour simply looks like that. What's coming up on your screen at the moment is pretty much we start on the hour and we're expecting to finish about 3 p.m. I say about 3 p.m. because questions means that it's difficult to tell exactly where we're going to end up. But there you go. That's any questions about that? Okay, good. Let's assume that you're all clear with that. And really, that was a simple end of it. We were in the shallow end of the swimming pool there. So but hopefully that's, you know, pretty straightforward. Okay, so when we go to deal with overwhelm, when we're looking at overwhelm, the reality is that overwhelm as an experience that people have used to be a rare thing. It was a thing that kind of, you know, didn't happen to everybody. And when it did, it was kind of would cause, you know, my mom would talk about a friend of hers who had a mental breakdown. What that meant was that, you know, that person wasn't coping, whether they were not coping because it was too much work or there was a divorce on or whatever it was. And when I was a child, a mental breakdown was considered a sign of weakness. It was a sort of a sign that you weren't tough enough and you weren't smart enough or you weren't good enough to handle it. And probably that's, you know, that's just how it was back in the 60s when I was a youngster. But if you go to 2018 and look at surveys that have been done, well, there was a survey in 2018, 73% of people said, and this is right across the country, that they had felt overwhelmed at least once in the last few days and maybe even more than once in the last few days. So this was kind of like a at least once. That's back in 2018, when you might think that things are a little bit easier than they are at the moment, because in 2020 so far we've had fire, flood, and rather than famine, we got COVID-19. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal for most people to have handled. The COVID-19 thing hasn't gone away like most people expected. We thought in Australia, we thought we had it nailed. You know, we see now what's called the second wave happening. Some people are saying it's not the second wave. It's actually a characteristic of the first wave, which is that everybody hunkered down and kind of followed instructions to be careful, but got sick of it, thought that I got it nailed, and now wandering around saying, but I've done my bit, what's all of this stuff, blah, blah, blah. So the continuing thing means here we are in July, still struggling to get things on board that we had planned for February, March and April of this year. So, you know, massive dislocation. I see massive levels of fear out there. You know, I deal with it every day in my work. And there's a kind of a background expectant thing that it's all really difficult and we're coping with more than we've ever coped with before, which I think would be a pretty accurate thing to say anyway. When we have a look at making a success of our lives, then there's a researcher called Paul Purcell, and he's written a book that I forget the name of. It goes back about 10 years, but if you searched his name, then you would come up with whatever the name of the book was that he wrote. But he talks about two kinds of success. The first kind of success is what he calls toxic success. And what he means by toxic success is that feeling of constantly feeling pressured and perhaps overwhelmed, and that basically there's just too little time to enjoy the things in life that we are wanting to enjoy. In other words, there's too much time taken up with getting the little things in life that are the things that we want. You know, typically, many of you have a business of your own, and the purpose of that business is to provide you with an extra income so that you can have the small, enjoyable things in life, and that's perhaps send your kids to a private school or go on a holiday or whatever. Not that an overseas holiday is a possibility right at the moment, but those things seem to be rare and seem to be kind of difficult to enjoy. And you might have bought yourself a nice car, and even that's kind of, you know, we're so busy now that we don't really get to take the pleasures in the connections in our life with the people that matter to us because we're too busy. and we're too busy to kind of be getting the things that actually make us work. So toxic success can be defined as something that we feel like we have to be working towards, that we're pursuing it, that we're chasing it, so to speak, that we're looking to make it happen and to manufacture it, whereas genuine success is going to be something that comes from within. So Paul Purcell defined proper success as sweet success. He said, success won't be sweet until you get what is the sweet thing in life, or the thing that makes your life sing, or be in harmony or whatever. And so when asked what that is, he says, well, it's being able to pay undivided and full attention to the things that actually matter the most to you. And whether that's, you know, connecting with the people that you care the most about, or pursuing a hobby that you are passionate about, or doing the thing that is uplifting of your spirit, then those are the things that matter most in our life. And generally speaking, when we're overwhelmed, they're the things that go out the window. So being able to do that and spend undivided time on that means that you end up getting this state of satisfaction and delight with the blend that you have of the love, the work, and the play that are the obvious components of your life. So it's kind of like, really, he's saying, getting, you know, you would hear people say, where's the balance in my life? Or lost life balance. It's really what they're talking about is it's all work and no play. You know, and looking at Julie sitting there, you know, most of us kind of go, yeah, more of that and less of the work that it takes to get that. You know, so it's a, really what we want to be is we don't want to be consumed by earning the living. We want earning the living to be there, and if possible, for that to be an uplifting thing to do. And that basically we feel really fully alive, and we find the joy that we're looking for in connecting with the people that are present in our life. That makes sense. Hey, Dobbs, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good, mate. Very good. I just said that so that I could hear that accent. You know, even when you laugh, you sound like a Southern American.
Well, I can't help that because that's actually what I am.
Are you not an Australian?
Yeah, I'm. I don't know what I am. I am.
Okay. All right. So good to have you with us. Thanks for checking in. So really what Paul Purcell was saying is that most of us have kind of been pushed or felt like we've moved in the direction of, you know, too much work and not enough play. And if you define what is play, then he's pretty smart, because he doesn't say play is this, that, or the other. He says whatever you play at, whatever is a thing for you, the result of that is that you're going to feel like you're paying attention to what matters, and that there's a feeling of being alive and finding joy in your connections, those kind of things. So that's why I quoted from this guy, because I think that he's got a really good way of looking at it. Instead of saying it's snow skiing or it's gardening or it's fishing, what he's saying is, well, whatever it is, it will result in you feeling this way. So that's a pretty important thing. What I want to share with you is what I hear every day from clients. And pretty much I am in connection with clients every day. If not every day, it's because I've got several on one day. So, you know, it's a very regular thing. And what I hear every day from people talking about, you know, getting their life back in order, getting things how they want them to be, is that they start out with, look, I've just got to get through this current thing with the 14-year-old, or I've just got to get this through this thing with the business, or I've just got to make this or that happen, and then everything will be okay. And it's an incredibly, I'm sure you've heard it yourself. It's kind of like, you know, once we just get the kids into school, everything will be all right. Once we just get the kids out of school, everything will be all right. Once we just get the business to the next level, everything will be all right. And, you know, with the business, it's kind of, we'll get it to the here because then I can do that, you know, which is employ someone to do some of my work or whatever it is. But, you know, usually what comes up is some kind of project we're working on, some kind of difficulty that has to be overcome, an illness that has to be got through, or a problem that has to be solved, and then everything's going to be on easy street. Now, I'm interested, have any of you heard this expression in your you know, your day-to-day meetings with other people. How many of you are familiar with this concept of, I've just got to get through this kind of pile of, this mountain of stuff, and then everything will be all right?
Not always. Yeah. Very frequently, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very frequent kind of a thing for us to hear. And the reason that we hear it is that that actually portrays an attitude which says, I'm living short term. My focus is kind of like almost 1 week or 1 month at a time, rather than a longer term focus on things that are much deeper and much more powerful, much more meaningful. Hey, Janelle, how are you doing?
Hello, sorry, I just got the link.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Just pull the laptop down, screen down a little bit, because we've got a massive view up your nostrils. Perfect. Okay.
Just got to get rid of you for a minute and turn this.
Yeah, you do that. We'll continue on. Welcome. Okay, so essentially what we're saying is that we need a bunch of strategies to deal with, which are going to help us move our way through without getting the overwhelm that is so common nowadays. So the first thing to look at, because we need to dive straight into it, is what I call your direction of travel. Now, what we mean by direction of travel is that a lot of people are climbing a ladder that's leaning against the incorrect wall. And what I mean by that is that we're putting a lot of effort. If you imagine the visual of climbing a ladder, then, you know, and it's a long ladder, then we've got to put in a lot of effort and away we go. And most of us do that willingly and we give it a good go. But we can quite often climb a ladder to a place that is not going to get us what we want. So that's what we mean by is a ladder leaning against the correct wall. Another observation that I would like to pass on, because I know some of you have been tarred with this brush, and that is you've been tarred with the brush of being a perfectionist. And the problem with that is that efficiency does not equal effectiveness. And as I look at your faces on the screen and I see how many of you are involved in business nowadays, then what I'm going to suggest to you is that effectiveness is the only thing that counts. And efficiency is actually going to cost you time and money. More than the time and money, it's going to cost you grief. And the reason behind that is, for whatever reason, your leanings towards perfectionism mean that the pressure is greater on you. And the pressure is greater on you because not only have you got a lot of things to do, but they've got to be right. And that means that you'll push that last 15 or 20% when it's unnecessary. Now, it is necessary on many occasions. In other words, if you think about perfectionists and the role of a perfectionist, there are many good places in our community for perfectionists. And I don't mean to say anything disparaging about perfectionists. I understand that perfectionists are just as wonderful of people as the next person. Perfectionism is a behaviour, it's not a core character. It's a personality. It's a surface issue. It's not... A perfectionist is not more or less lovable than someone who is or isn't. So I don't mean to make any distinction around the quality or the depth of character of an individual as a perfectionist. What I'm going to say is that the perfectionist chews up huge amounts of time on things that don't matter, that don't make a difference. Now, having said that, if you're going to get on an airplane, that would be a rare thing nowadays, but if you're going to get on an airplane, you actually want that thing designed and built by perfectionists. So if you're going to use a computer program, you want that thing designed and built by perfectionists. So there are places where nothing less than perfect is acceptable, but there are many places where near enough is good enough. And that's a critically important thing to understand, because if you can get the difference, what you'll find is that effectiveness means the opposite of doing things right. It doesn't mean doing things right. It means doing the right things. And one of the reasons we get overwhelmed is we're not actually doing the right things. We're doing the things that, well, we'll explain what they are in a moment, but they're the things that stop us from being effective, but it means we get a lot done. So if you're going to be effective, then what you have to do is what Stephen Covey calls put first things first. When you think about it, first things, first principles in your life, if we say, okay, how you operate day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, how you operate really depends on what your values are, what your mission and what your vision is. Now, the opposite of that is that we're just coping with what's going on at the moment. So values are about who you are. I believe, having spent a lot of time teaching this material and watching how it shows up in other people's lives, I believe that your most valuable possession is your values. In other words, the way you conduct yourself, your principles, your beliefs. Those things are at the core of who you are and what you do. And when you get a success at the expense of your values, where you shortcut, where you let go one of your principles or your beliefs, when you get a success at that level, it will be hollow and it won't count towards making you feel like you're getting somewhere. You will kind of have this sort of emptiness about it. The problem we experience at the moment, and I don't want to go on about it, but the rate of change in our culture simply means that we're getting more and more on our plate. And if you can take that as read without me having to go through all the examples of how things are going faster and how more of us are expected of us and all of that sort of stuff, then what you'll see is that we're headed into a future which is becoming less and less predictable. So when I was made a school teacher, and I emphasize I was turned into one, I did not volunteer, but I ended up as a school teacher via the sins of omission. In other words, I didn't say I did not want to be a school teacher. I just couldn't think of anything better, so I drifted into being a school teacher. But my parents celebrated the greatest victory in their lives. This was their son going into a job that you could not get fired from, and the meaning of that was highly secure. And what that meant was that I would not have to go through the pain and agony that they went through, because they went through the depression and they had periods where they were hungry and lonely and cold and all those sort of things. And my dad recalls living on the street with his mum for what he thinks was somewhere between 3 weeks and 3 months, but he was too young to remember. And they were stealing food to survive. So for a person who's been through that experience, any job is better than no job. So someone who's been through that experience is very happy shoveling horse shit out of horse stables as a job, because it's a job and they will eat this week. So when I was made a school teacher, then that to them was not just the job you couldn't get fired from. It was also a profession. So they were as happy as. What they were happy about was the security that I was going to experience as a consequence of having that job. What I was unhappy about was I saw that I was trapped in a room with 24 kids who had access to lethal weapons, and the brick wall at the back of the room was my horizon. And so I never really turned out to be a great school teacher. I can point out some victories I had as a school teacher and some friends I made at that time who are still friends. And so it's not all negative, but it's kind of one of those things where I was climbing a ladder that was leaning against the wrong wall. I couldn't imagine that life was going to be great when I was a principal, if I'd worked my way up the ladder, all of those sort of things. It was just kind of like not headed in the right direction. So I would have had a bunch of victories that would have been meaningless to me. And that happens a lot. So we kind of got to look at this and go, okay, that's the predictability of the school teacher thing or the public service thing or your own business or any of those kind of things has largely vanished. And it's vanished in such a way that most of us haven't noticed. And what I mean by that is that the degree of change that we've been through now, we're only just starting to notice how rapid it is. But it actually started 30 years ago, 40 years ago maybe, when little things made fundamental differences in our life and how we could live them. I remember 30 years ago, Mary and I realized that we could move from Sydney into the country because they invented a thing called a fax machine. And the fax machine meant that we could move documents, and mostly we wanted people to send us a photocopy of a receipt that they'd paid for our course. So we could live anywhere because, you know, the fax machine would go bzzz and through would come the thing and we'd go, beauty, there's another person registered for the course, etc. And we could run our business. Nowadays, you would go a fair way to find a fax machine that's in constant use or in daily use, maybe even weekly use. So those things change. But what's happening is that we are less and less able to predict the future. So this is a little bit like hacking your way into the Amazon forest. Essentially, you can't take a map with you that's any use because you can't see where you are. And the map for where you're going through the Amazon forest is pretty much useless unless you have a compass. Because once you're in the forest far enough, you can't tell which way is up or down. And what a compass does, well, you tell me, what does a compass do?
Gives direction.
Yeah, how does it give direction?
You read it.
Yeah, what do you read?
It's true north.
Mm.
Uh-huh. So the only thing a compass does is tell you one thing. You figure out the rest yourself. Right? So the compass is a very basic, very simple device, and it points at true north, and I'm going to say the same is true of your values. The surroundings will change. The jungle will change. How we earn a living will change. But you won't. Unless you let the outside circumstances change you. So because the compass points north, we're able to figure out for ourselves where east and west and south is. Without the compass, we've got no idea. And I'm going to suggest to you that as we go into the future and the jungle around you changes and you can't tell where you are and you can't tell how far you've gone, you need something that points north or true north, and true north is your values or your mission or your vision. Most people have no idea how to do that. Most people will be shaped by the future instead of them shaping the future. And so the fundamental first step in overcoming overwhelm is that you have to be in charge. And there are changes that you have to insist on, and they're going to be you insisting on you behaving differently. From that perspective, the only thing we can count on is your values. So we're going to do a quick exercise. I know some of you have done this exercise before. You can treat this part as revision to double check on it. So right now, jot down the names of 10 people that you admire. So grab your pen and paper. I'm going to give you a few minutes to do it. I'll give you 5 minutes to do this. You may not get to 10, but you might go past 10. So just the names of 10 people who you admire or respect or look up to. And of course, these people don't have to be real people. And they might be characters out of history. Now, I found this exercise pretty difficult after about number 7. So what I'm going to get you to do is just share the first 1 or 2 or 3 so that other people can grab that. They can steal it if they like it. So who's the first couple on your list, Michael? Or any couple on your list? You'll have to unmute yourself, mate.
Okay.
We have two Michaels, sorry. So let's go with Michael Matthews, and then we'll come to Michael Goot.
Thanks, Paul. Pretty easy to start with because both my mother and my father were two people that I absolutely admired their entire lives. A couple of other people. I looked up Muhammad Ali was an amazing person.
Uh-huh.
He had values that he just followed unwaveringly.
I'll get you to talk about why later. At the moment, I just want names. So we've got two or three from you. Let's go to Peter Jones. And
okay.
Michael Matthews, I'll get you to mute yourself because there's some kind of noise coming through. Let's go to Peter. Who? Just a couple of names, Pete.
My wife, Felicity.
Yeah.
My son, Daniel.
Uh-huh.
My daughter, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
And Barack Obama.
Great. Okay. Let's go to Janelle.
I've got Princess Diana, Mother Teresa, and Ted Noffs, the first three.
Uh-huh, cool. Beauty. Angela Mallett.
Okay, I've got a few different ones. So I've got one. There's a girl called Adrian, who's one of my patients.
Mm-hmm.
There's a local business owner around me. Her name's Carolyn. Pippa, who is a Pilates instructor, and my son Dom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Going into the Air Force. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. These are just good. What we're doing is just hoping to trigger each other. We'll go to Felicity. Felicity, you better mention Peter.
I suppose I should, shouldn't I? a woman called Mel Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
A unit manager I used to work with called Georgie, palliative care. A dear friend of mine, Kath. I also had my daughter, Sarah. Marcus Aurelius. My mum and dad.
Cool. Great. Okay, thanks for that. Dobbs, let's hear a couple off your list.
Well, number one is my father.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is my wife.
Yeah.
Major. And then Josh, who's a fellow coach, a victim of your coach, Nicholas. And my doctor, who is absolutely fabulous, the best clinician I've ever had. And also my cardiologist, who has kept me alive against all odds. And Peter Birch of Musica Viva, and Andrew Bolt, who was my agent for a while, but got a job in England and deserted me, but I forgive him.
Okay, cool. Thanks for that. Okay, so let's go to the next question. All right, so beside each name that you've got on your list, just jot down the qualities that you admire in each person. So that might be that they're, if you had Mother Teresa, then maybe it's unconditional love, or it could be generosity, it could be compassion, it could be work ethic, whatever. So we'll give you another 5 minutes. Beside each name, what is the thing that you admire about that person? Ready, set, go. Looks to me like all of you are writing except one of you is typing. So my guess is that's you, Janelle. Are you typing that stuff?
No, I'm writing.
You're writing?
Yeah.
Because I can hear someone smashing their keyboard. Whoever it is, your keyboard's not going to last long. So, Jules, is that your job to sit there all day watching us?
Not watching, I'm supporting.
You what?
Not watching, I'm supporting. I'm tech help.
Yeah, I know that you're tech help, but, you know, we're here till 3 o'clock. Have you got to just sit there till 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Is somebody going to bring you food?
I have no doubt that they will.
Okay.
At least she's not reading a book while listening to you.
Yeah, well, we can't see that.
Yes, you can.
I would never. I would never. Only thing I've got to do is a mad dash to take the dog to the toilet at some point. But
yeah,
otherwise, I'll be here.
Mm.
You look very happy there, Jules.
I am pretty happy. I love being on the water. Very spoiled.
I can think of worse places to be tech help.
Yes. That's right. If it gets too hard, I can just chuck it in the drink.
Yes, and then I will definitely need tech help.
Yeah, that's true. But I won't know that.
That's true. Yeah. Well, if they bring you champagne, then I recommend you do chuck it in the drink. Not the champagne.
They won't. They won't. They'll wait. They will wait. 3 o'clock's not like they've been waiting that long, to be honest.
Yeah, 3 o'clock's probably... Some people would say 3 o'clock's early.
Yes.
Mm. I wouldn't.
No.
Bronwyn O'Brien's joined us.
Oh, yes, hey, finally. Good morning. I'm glad we're talking about overwhelm. I've had one of those mornings and it's not even, you know, morning tea time.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, we're nearly at the first break. That'll allow you to catch up.
Yes, I hope. Anyway, I will catch up.
Cool. Are you aware of what we're doing?
Yes.
Sweet. Okay. All right, so what I'm going to get you to do is share some of what you've been jotting down. So what are those things? So in any random particular order, let's go to Michael Goot. So the things that you wrote down that you admire about those people.
Top of my list is my mother, who was very successful in whatever she tackled. She had huge determination and she was elegant and stylish in her dressing.
Uh-huh. Cool. So underline determination and elegance.
Right. I've got a second one, which is totally different from those. This one's Julia Gillard.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think was extremely successful in her time to achieve prime ministership and during her prime ministership. Her success in legislation through was never really commented on, but she was a very successful administrator and she was a very adept negotiator. So that was Judy. And gone. And the third one is way out, Robert the Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
His determination from watching Spider, as the story would go, try and try and try again until that spider succeeded in achieving what it was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
That, thanks.
Great. Okie doke. Let's go to Janelle. What do you got, mate?
Okay, so for Princess Diana, I had the voice of the people and her inclusive nature and her kindness and her smile. Mother Teresa, I had unconditional love, compassion and kindness. And Ted Noffs, he is a person that always gave back and was always thinking of ways to support those less well-off, his generosity of spirit.
Great. Thanks, mate. So what you do is you underline those words. Most of those words you would underline. Basically, we're wanting to underline characteristics, you know, things that the ones we admired. So, Felicity, what did you come up with?
For Mel Robbins, I said insightful and generous with her knowledge. Mm-hmm. She does a lot, a very intensive programs that she offers for free, which really helped, I think, build her up as an amazing, insightful woman.
Right.
For my mum and dad, it was that they, in an era that really you didn't, they displayed their love to each other outside, like in society. So they'd hold hands, they'd hug, which I don't think I ever knew any other of my friends' mum and dads used to do that. So I was... Mm. I used to get very embarrassed, but at the same time it was like, oh wow, that's really, I thought that was
beautiful. Yeah, you can get embarrassed but hope that it happens to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just another with a friend of mine, Kath. She's very generous and always smiling, although she herself is going through some really adverse times, and that she just keeps on
giving. So that's courage.
Yeah, it is courage. Yeah.
Yeah. So just jot down courage and underline it, because we're actually looking for characteristics here that are important. I won't go any further. I won't ask any more of you what those things are. These are all great examples. What I want to point out to you is that those qualities that, you know, I've been saying underline them, but those things are actually your values. So in Felicity's case, what she really admires is courage. Well, that's what. You know, when it comes time to people talking about Felicity, one of the things Felicity's going to want is that they have seen her demonstrate courage. Would that make sense, Felicity? Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah.
So these things are our values, and the more of them that you've got on the list, and the more of them that, you know, that you have underlined because they are a characteristic of someone, then the better off you are. So we need that list, because that list of our values is the place to start. And for those who've done this exercise before, what I'm going to suggest to you is that it's really good to refresh it. It's really good to renew it and do what I call revision. And if you haven't done this exercise before, and if you have, then what I'm going to suggest to you is that you actually need to do this exercise at least once every year. Because our circumstances change. It is likely that your values will morph. They won't change dramatically. It's unlikely they're going to change dramatically from one year to the next. But over a period of time, you might notice that they morph because of the roles that you're playing in your life. You know, it's kind of like in my life, I've gone from being, my primary role was as a partner, because Mary and I were married for 12 years before Julie turned up, and then Emma after her. So then one of my primary roles became not just partner but parent. And now, just in the last few years, not just partner and parent but grandparent. And so the values don't really change, but the way that they get expressed does. The methodology, you know, how that gets to be expressed changes, and that changes day-to-day experiences. So you can expect that to happen. We're going to look at the next thing to do with that after the break, because it's now 10:45. So we're going to take a break. When you come back, you'll see this exact same slide. And what time do we come back? Somebody tell me.
11.
11. And in fact, it's on the hour, every hour. So see you guys shortly.